You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org. That's a great resource for folks who are outside of our listening area, or if you're driving home and live afar, you can sign on your computer and go to wdiy.org and listen. You can tell your friends and family, as well as listen to old shows, podcasts that we've had. Look for topics that are interesting to you and applicable to you. And some folks even download those on their devices and listen to them at their convenience. Maybe you're taking a trip, driving. It's a great, great resource for you. And that's again at WDIY.org. Good evening. Today is June 25th, 2014. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 16,867, the NASDAQ at 4379, and the S&P at 1959. Last week, we had as a guest attorney Kirby Upright, who discussed the ramifications of the Whitewood case, which overturned Pennsylvania's ban on same-sex marriage. I want to thank Kirby for being here. He's a leading, I don't know if we can use the word expert for attorneys, but if I could, that's what I would say on this subject. So I thank Kirby Upright from King Spry Herman Freund Law Firm in Bethlehem for being here last week and taking time out of his busy schedule. Tonight, we're talking about going into business for yourself and what are some important aspects that you need to consider. We are live. We are here to take your questions. Judy Ann will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute the radio so you can hear me without confusion. We can talk without confusion so you don't have the delay. I'm talking confusedly right now, and I'm sorry. That way you know it's a live show. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I do typically have a topic each week, you can always ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. If you have questions and you do want to talk live on air with me, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and if you're not comfortable talking live on air, we have a couple options for you. You can call in and give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. That's the same phone number, 610-758-8810. Questions may also be submitted through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight, the show is called So You'll Want to Go Into Business for Yourself. And what's really funny, I mean, I come up with these topic ideas, show ideas, you know, sometimes weeks in advance, sometimes, you know, right before I come into the studio, but typically weeks in advance. And for some reason, I wanted to talk about going into business for yourself and different business structures. And I was driving into work this morning, listening to WDIY, of course, and the news program. And I'm not sure who put the news program together for this morning's broadcast, but I heard them talking about a new study that had come out about Allentown being a hub for what they call solopreneurs. So let me read what I then, you know, looked this up quickly this afternoon, and it said the Allentown metro area, with its more than 800,000 residents, is the number two hub for solo entrepreneurs, according to a study, sparefoot.com, where they gathered data for the 100 most populated metro areas to rank the top 15 hubs for solopreneurs. That's a new word. I've never heard that before. Solopreneurs may freelance, consult, coach, offer services, or sell products. The defining characteristic is that whatever they do it without the help of a single employee, the site says. And Allentown is between the number one hub, McAllen, Texas, and number three is Chattanooga, Tennessee. So that was from sparefoot.com. So I thought that was interesting, and especially interesting that I heard it this morning and happened to be talking tonight about going into business for yourself. So what I'm going to do is first kind of talk about that decision making a little bit, and then I want to talk about the various business structures that someone may use in running a business, some of the highlights and some of the pitfalls. And then I want to make sure that I also talk about some resources that are available for people who may be thinking about going into business or considering it. And then if we have time, I'll try to follow up with maybe some experiences and some, tax issues that I might want to offer and share with you. So if you have questions about this or some other topic, again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And when I say some other topic, sometimes what ends up happening, I might be talking about a show on running a business, and then I might mention now, a solo entrepreneur, solely held business, sole proprietor, could have their own retirement plan. And all of a sudden, then that could kick off a whole slew of questions about retirement plans and the capability that someone might have if they're self-employed and what kind of plans they have, that type of thing. Okay, so some of the considerations that we have when thinking about going into business for ourselves is, and I say this from a little bit of experience, because I have to tell you, sometimes I'm a little cautious for people, maybe more cautious than most CPAs, and I'm a little cautious because I'm from a family of self-employed people. My parents had a store, and a hardware store, and it served the family well, from a big family, served the family well for many, many years. But I will tell you that, it's a big responsibility. There's liability involved, and it's not always as easy and wonderful as some people think. Some people are attracted to the idea of being self-employed because they're their own boss and they can, decide their work hours and things like that. But you also have to recognize sometimes when you are your own boss and you're relying on your income that you're pretty much working 24/7. That's what happened in my own family. I did not have a vacation ever I didn't have a vacation until I was in 10th grade, and it was overnight at Cedar Point, and that was the vacation, 10th grade. So, that's what it is to be self-employed. There was nobody else to run the business. My parents and my brothers were it. So that kind of changed as we got older and the kids were out of the house. I think my parents' expenses went down. So what are some of the other considerations someone should think about when going into business for themselves? I would suggest that you have to make sure your business idea is viable. Is it flexible? Is it going to be profitable? The IRS expects that if you go into business for yourself, that you're going to be profitable, and they expect to see a profit. And if you don't have a profit over so many years, then, they may start disallowing it and treat it like a hobby. So you do want to make sure that you're profitable. It's a little frustrating when I see people trying to spend money to get deductions so they can have a loss on their tax return. That doesn't make any sense. You're spending money and losing money to save something, but net, you're out of pocket, folks. So that's not always a great idea. So some of the things you want to do before you go into business, you want to kind of analyze what you're doing. And there is something in the business world called the SWOT analysis, and that's spelled SWOT, SWOT analysis. And what that stands for are the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So what you would do is you would set up a grid, a four-box grid with SWOT, and identify the strengths that you have on the left side, the weaknesses on the right side, and then in the lower quadrant, the opportunities, and then in the right lower quadrant, the threats. And kind of talk about that, really honestly with yourself, maybe friends, colleagues, advisors, to try to nail that down. You also want to understand the market segment you want to do some income and expense projections. If you're buying a business, you want to review the financial statements of the current owner, and you want to draft a business plan. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about each of those as I go through the show here, talk about the different structures of the business, resources at the end. And I just received a phone call that's going to be off air with a question. And when I come back from my break, I'll answer that question. So we'll be back in just a minute. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit wdiy.org.
Okay, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight we're talking about going into business for yourself and what that might look like, what you need to think about, the different kinds of business structures, what kind of opportunities or liabilities you might have around that, and how to kind of do some of that initial research. And we'll talk a little bit about probably some tax implications as well. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We did have a call come in, which was off air. Bob from Allentown called to ask a question that's not on topic. And I said, you don't have to ask a question about what I'm talking about tonight. It could be anything. And Bob did just that. So, Bob, thank you for calling. He said he heard about an annuity that if you withdraw at 5%, the principal doesn't go down. He said it's 50% invested in the stock market and 50% in some kind of fixed income or other asset. Is something like this a good idea? He is age 62 and he can withdraw at 65. Bob, it's very difficult to comment on annuities. First of all, I don't get involved with annuities, but it's very difficult to comment because there are so many annuities that have different characteristics. You really have to make sure that you read the fine print when someone is talking to you about purchasing annuity, making an investment in that. What I can say about annuities is that they may be appropriate for some people depending on their circumstance, and you want to understand the cost behind it. You want to understand the penalties behind it. When can you take money out? You said at age 65, is there some penalty for that? Sometimes when people will take money out of an annuity, they may give up some kind of guaranteed benefit, or they may give up some future, step up, so there are so many different kinds of annuities, and I am not someone who has that off the top of my head, because the bit of issues I have with annuities is, first of all, if it's part of a portfolio, that might be one thing. But people need to understand when they take money out of annuities, it's all ordinary income. So that's the piece I struggle with. It's all ordinary income when sometimes the underlying investments that are in that annuity, if you held it outside of your annuity, may give you favorable tax rates, capital gains, and things like that. A lot of people don't realize that annuities, when you take money out of them, if they have increased, beyond your original investment, it's all going to be ordinary income. And for federal purposes, and I'm talking about a non-qualified annuity, sometimes people will have annuities in their retirement accounts. In a non-qualified annuity, you'd have a chance of making, you could either put your money, invest it yourself, or invest it in an annuity. And in the annuity, someone else is taking the responsibility for how it's invested. But for Pennsylvania residents, the gain, if you take a distribution, earnings typically come out first, and the earnings would be ordinary income. That might throw your other income up on page one of your return. If you're taking Social Security, it could impact the taxation on your Social Security. It's also taxable for Pennsylvania purposes, and it does not get a step up in basis if you die. So if you die holding an annuity and your children now inherit it or your wife inherits it, the income aspect of that annuity continues and it's all ordinary income. Whereas if you invested, and I'm not suggesting one way is right for you or not, I can't make those recommendations, but if you invested in some mutual funds and you have to sell something, you're only going to get taxed on the gain, and you might have favorable tax rates on that gain if it's long term. You might get dividends on it, which if they're qualified dividends, there's favorable tax rates on that. But you can also sometimes control the income on your return a little bit better. So if you needed $10,000 out of an annuity that had $10,000 of gain in it, and you took a $10,000 distribution, that whole $10,000, the earnings always come out first. Whereas if you needed $10,000 out of maybe your brokerage account, you could maybe take out $10,000 and the taxation might be minimal if you sell something and only take a return of your principal on a sale, something that didn't appreciate, and you know, you can pick different funds. So I feel like there's a little bit more flexibility outside of an annuity. So my caution to you is just be careful what you get into. It may be appropriate for you. It all depends. You want to make sure you understand your other cash flow issues, your income tax issues, and the consequences of you starting to take that money out. See if it has an effect on future distributions, future benefits that they may have told you you would have had. Okay, I hope that helps. Sometimes when people call in off air, I don't always know if I've answered their question appropriately or adequately. So, Bob, I hope that helped, but I thank you for calling in. Folks, if you do have questions, you can call in. The number is 610-758-8810. So, and it can be off topic as well, but we are talking about going into business for yourself tonight. And I had just mentioned that before you go into business, I really think it's very smart. As I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive. And the way to be proactive in thinking about going into business is think it through before you do it. You might say, well, Lori, sometimes risk takers are the ones who, you know, get rewarded. But I think it's the few risk takers who get rewarded. For most people who take risk, they need to be really thought out. So I think it's just smart to do your homework first, do a SWOT analysis, look at the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats of your idea, and then make sure you understand the market segment. For the income and expense projections, sometimes what you can do is if you're buying a business, you can review the financial statements of that prior owner and or the current owner, and maybe do some projections about like how you think you might change the business. But if you're not buying a business and you're just starting it up for yourself, you might say, well, I have no idea what I might be able to do. Well, that's when it becomes really important that you make sure you understand the market that you're going into and what you're selling. You know, there's one outfit that promotes college kids and high school kids. Well, kids going to college, I guess, right out of high school, that promotes them selling knives. And one of the things I found is that I think the kids had to buy their own knives, and then, you know, they sell them to their family members, and then they try to sell them to their friends. Well, you find out that everybody in the neighborhood is all doing it. The kids talk to each other and they all start doing it. And guess what? It ends up being you don't have as big of a market as you thought you did, even if it's a good product, that you kind of tap out. It's a little hard. So you want to make sure if you're going to sell, you know, cosmetics or you're going to sell jewelry, is everybody else in the neighborhood doing the same thing? Have you, you know, I forgot what the term is, you know, just where it's oversold. So you've got to be careful. You might have a store idea. Maybe you want to go into business and have a store or a restaurant. Well, restaurants, you know, you have long hours, late hours. There's lots of competition, and there could be different liabilities for you there. I had a gentleman come to me once, was thinking about buying a sandwich shop, and thought he could make it work. Well, you know, we talked it through, and I said, now the people who own the sandwich shop currently work there, you know, all the time, the husband and wife. This gentleman worked full-time somewhere else. So I said, there's an expense for you that they didn't have. You have to hire someone. And then he wanted to put in a coffee shop as well with a drive-through window. And I said, okay, there's another expense. You have to get zoning. You have to get permission to put in a drive-through, to bust through the wall, put in a window. Now you don't have to have one employee managing the sandwich shop. Now you need two because you need someone to watch the window, do the sandwich. You know, so all of a sudden, some of the issues started to snowball, and he started to recognize that, you know, what looked like it might be a good idea, the profit margin was kind of going away when we started talking about all the expenses that he had. I don't mean to deter anyone. I love entrepreneurs. They do some of the greatest things. I just want people to be smart about what they're doing before they do it. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
And welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We are talking about going into business for yourself and coming up with some structure around that decision-making process. And then I'm going to talk about some of the different business structures that people have or that you could use. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And if you have questions off topic, you're also welcome to call in. And you can either talk live on air or give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and I'll do the best I can to answer that. I do also want to thank a CPA from Valley National that helped me with the preparing for the show, because she's the business go-to person, CPA in the office at Valley National Financial Advisors. And she was very helpful, so I appreciate her help and wanted to give her credit for that. We talked a little bit about making sure you understand if the business would be viable. You want it to also be flexible and ongoing. You also want to talk about whether, I guess you don't want to talk about this. You actually want to do it. You want to draft a business plan. So as I get toward the end of the show, when we talk about resources, I'm going to talk about some resources to do that. But you definitely should draft a business plan. And part of that would also be understanding the market then and doing those projections, but doing it a little bit more formally than just kind of like off the top of your head. Now, the second thing you'd want to consider is what business structure will suit your model. Do you want to work alone? Do you want to work with someone? Are you worried about liability? Do you have assets that need to be protected? Maybe a profession that might be a target for lawsuits. So you want to make sure you understand what your business is and what your personal assets are, what you're willing to take on as far as liability and how you need to protect yourself, or are you going into this venture with someone? Because that would require maybe some different business structures. So we're going to talk about those in a minute. The third thing you need to do is revisit the business structure for your situation periodically. So we may have some listeners who are already in business for themselves. They might be sole proprietors or partners or shareholders. So once in a while, you have to revisit your business structure to see if it still makes sense for you? Is it time to maybe launch into something more than a sole proprietor? Or is it time to scale back? Maybe your partnership or your corporation, your S-Corp, isn't working for you the way you it used to, or you don't need it, you're scaling back, maybe you want to change the business structure, time to get out, that kind of thing. So you want to revisit it from time to time so that there's no surprises and that you have time to do some planning if it will help you kind of in the end if you're selling, how you can position yourself to make sure that you take advantage of all the tax advantages that you can, et cetera. So let's talk about some of the business structures. Let me first tell you what those business structures are and then what we're going to talk about. So we have a sole proprietor, we have a partnership, we have corporations, we have S corporations, and we have something called an LLC, which is really a very hot designation that many people feel they have to have or need these days. And I'm not even sure when those came into existence. It hasn't been terribly long. I know certainly not at the start of my career, but we are going to talk about what that means, an LLC. So many people think that they're, a corporation or something when they say LLC is, a limited liability corporation. It's not that. It's a limited liability company, which could be a corporation, but could be also many other forms as well. So let's talk about business structures. So a sole proprietor is someone who owns an unincorporated business by himself or herself, and 100% of the profit and loss is reported on the individual income tax return on Schedule C. So sole proprietor, you're in business, your profit and loss all on Schedule C, which is what sole proprietors use to report their income to the IRS. So you've heard of maybe a Schedule A for those people who itemize deductions like their real estate taxes and mortgage interest. There's a Schedule B where people report their interest and dividends. And a Schedule C is where you report your business income. There is more risk exposure due to the unlimited liability of being a sole proprietor. Unlimited liability means you're personally responsible for the debts and expenses of the business, and you're open to lawsuits. Generally, a sole proprietor is the least expensive structure to start because you don't need any legal documents or extra tax returns prepared. The Schedule C is part of your 1040 that you file each year. I'm not saying you might not need legal advice. You could still see a lawyer to talk about maybe what their suggestion might be for your business structure. But if it's not warranted that you have something to limit your liability, like a corporation, then a sole proprietorship might work for you. You just have to understand that you might have more exposure. So again, you might still need legal advice. You also might need to review your insurance. And I say might, I just say you should. You should review your insurance. You should get legal advice when you are looking at starting your own business and what your liability and what your exposure is. We just had a call come in. We had Carolyn from Salersburg. Hi, Carolyn, off air. And she said, we have a friend who took a lot of money out of stocks and went into cash. What does that mean? What exactly are cash assets? Carolyn, what that means when someone says they moved their stocks, they sold out and moved to cash. They literally sold their, either their stocks or their mutual funds and literally parked that money, those proceeds, into a cash account, maybe at their bank. If it was at a brokerage firm, they sold everything. They might have just told their broker or their financial advisor, their investment advisor, just go to cash. That means they sell everything or sell some part of it. They might have said, half of our portfolio, we went to cash. It means they literally sold something and just put it in cash. Now, sometimes a cash account at a brokerage firm or at your with an investment advisor could literally be cash, or it might be a money market account. It could be a federal money market account where it's, has treasuries. So when they go to cash, it's literally that they're just selling something. So I hope that answers your question. It sounds probably like, you know, something people would like to say, oh yeah, we went to cash. You know, maybe it's someone getting caught up in kind of the idea of like, we have to go to cash. So I hope that it's not something that someone's running around and acting, you know, out of fear on something. So be informed in any decision making. And so there may be reasons your friend went to cash. It may be that they need money for, you know, a mortgage or to buy something. So try not to put too much into whatever that transpired. Okay. I hope that answered your question. Folks, we are up for our next break. And when we come back, I'll finish up my brief discussion on sole proprietor. And then I'm going to talk about partnerships, S-Corps, C-Corps, LLCs, and then kind of putting that all together and then giving you some resources by the end of the show as well. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on a beautiful, beautiful June 25th. Wednesday evening in Bethlehem. Very nice. And we're talking about going into business for yourself and just being aware of some of the things you have to consider. And if you don't catch all the show or you're not able to listen through to the end of the show, you can always go on WDIY's website, wdiy.org. In a couple days, I believe the podcast gets posted there, or through yourfinancialchoices.com. We also have a podcast of the shows there as well. Now, business structure, sole proprietor, you're on your own, profits and loss get reported on your return. I said it's probably one of the cheaper ways to go into business for yourself because you don't necessarily have to have, you know, corporate documents, partnership agreements, that kind of thing. And the tax returns is not a separate tax preparation. It gets, you know, reported right on your Schedule C as part of your 1040. So the sole proprietor, what I like to think of this as is, If you don't have liability issues, this really is probably a good way to put your toe in the water, dip your toe in the water to see how it goes without a huge investment. I hate to see people investing a lot of money in all kinds of fancy planning, getting some fancy business structure, you know, put together and then it not really, you know, working out for them. So it's a good way to kind of dip your toe in the water, especially if you don't have liability issues. But there is a reason then to talk to your insurance agent as well, because there might be insurance that you could have that could also help protect you. You want to talk to your insurance agent about umbrella insurance and what business you're in and if that would give you some extra protection. We also want to talk about partnerships if you decide to go into business with someone. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute. I had another call come in from Bill in Bethlehem. Let me see if we can get this down. Took a loan from his home to buy a business. So a loan from his home, he probably did it with either he mortgaged or took a, you know, refi, took money out, or a home equity loan. He sold company to someone, but it's still in his name. They pay him $1,200 per month, the payment for his home loan. Exactly. There's no extra income. So when the people finish the payments, he will sign over the company. What taxes are involved for him today and or when he signs over the company? Well, Bill, this sounds like it's a little bit of a complicated situation. I'm not sure this is enough information for me to answer the question because I would have to see if you signed anything or they signed any agreements, how this is really working, who's reporting the income. And I would suggest that you really should see an attorney about this and consider whether or not you need some type of agreement because you said you sold it to them. There are some things that we can sell, buildings, maybe a business, I'm trying to think, on an installment sale. What happens with a business, though, Bill, if it's just in a building, it could be on an installment sale, and that's a little bit of a different animal. But typically, when you sell a business, there's different elements of that business. You could have inventory. You could have hard assets like desks and computers and depreciable assets. And you might have an element of goodwill. So really, when you go to sell a business, you need to kind of break that down to know exactly what you're selling, because your sale of your business is a reportable transaction. We have a form 4797, which is where we report the sale of businesses. Goodwill gets reported on Schedule D. So there might be different elements of what you're selling, and that really should kind of go through a process of looking at, you know, what you had on your books, what you had on your depreciation schedule, what is the person paying for, and if any of this payment contains an element of interest. So is there an element of interest income? Because they're paying you over time. So there might even be a little bit of an element of interest on that. So, you know, with installment sales, we report those. Gosh, I'm just trying to remember. Is it the 6151 or 6152? It just escaped my mind, the schedule for that. Those kinds of sales get reported differently as well. So I think you need a little extra help. There's not enough information on this, and you definitely need to report the sale, though, because they're buying something. But what is it that they're buying? Okay, so I hope that helps, Bill. And it also probably would depend on what kind of business structure, if it was, you know, Schedule C or a, you know, partnership interest or something like that. Okay, folks, if you have questions, I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And I guess I can tell with all these phone calls tonight that Allentown is the hub, number two hub of solopreneurs, the word they used from, who was that, sparefoot.com. So business structures, partnership. So let's pretend you're someone who wants to go into business with a partner. Some of this information, by the way, that I'm discussing tonight also comes from various resources with some of my own, you know, ideas thrown in, of course. But I've went on different sources like the IRS.gov, love government websites, IRS.gov, and a little bit from LegalZoom.com. So I just wanted to mention that. A partnership is the relationship existing between two or more persons who join to carry on a trade or business. Each person contributes money, property, labor, or skill, and expects to share in the profits and losses of the business. So a partnership must file an annual return. That's a 1065. They report the income, deductions, gains, losses from its operations. But it does not pay income tax. Instead, it passes through any profits or losses to its partners. We call that a pass-through entity. Each partner includes his or her share of the partnership's income or loss on his or her personal tax return. 100% of the income is subject to self-employment tax in most circumstances. And when I say most circumstances, it's because sometimes you might have a partnership that will have rental properties or, you know, different types of activities like that. And that would have a different character of income. That wouldn't necessarily be self-employment income to the partners. Partners are not employees. They should not be issued a W-2. The partnership, as I said, files its own tax return. And through that, then, with the information, the profit and or the loss or some other elements of income that might be at that partnership level, it kind of flows through on a document that's given to the partners called a K-1, a Schedule K-1. So that Schedule K-1 gets mailed to each of the partners. It says on the envelope, important tax information enclosed. And then the partners report that income on their respective tax returns, their income loss items on their individual return. And then they'll have self-employment tax on that. And some people might say, why would I pay self-employment tax? Well, when you're employed as of a company, your employer pays half your Social Security and you pay half the Social Security. And Social Security isn't even as simple as that anymore. Now it's old age disability income and Medicare. So it's made up of two pieces. And the employer pays half of both of those and the employee pays half of both of those. For sole proprietors and partners, you're paying the self-employment tax, which is the Social Security tax, yourselves. The sole proprietor, I said, it gets reported on Schedule C, and then that profit flows through to the Schedule SE for self-employment, and the same thing happens with partners. Their income flows through from the K-1 onto a Schedule E, page 2, and then that income flows through to the self-employment schedule. So it gets to be a little bit crazy, but it's all doable and all manageable, whether you get a K-1, you know, or a W-2 as an employee. Either way, they're tax reporting documents. You follow the instructions of the tax return, you get it in the right place, and it's not so bad. So if a partnership structure works for you, then by all means, you know, make sure you just do everything right. There is unlimited liability as well for partnerships. So remember when we were talking about the sole proprietor, they have unlimited liability. There is also unlimited liability for all partners in a standard partnership. There are variations of partnerships that may offer some limits on liability for certain partners. So you want to be careful if you're getting involved with a partnership, what is your status as a partner? There's something called limited partnerships, that would be an LP, where some partners' liability is limited, and they are therefore called limited partners. Typically, limited partners don't participate in the management, and they're considered passive investors or passive partners. The income that they get reported on their K-1 may have different consequences and tax strategies available to them by virtue of them being passive. So it could impact them differently than someone who is a regular partner. Typically in a limited partnership, as I mentioned, those limited partners don't participate in management decisions. There are active partners who take on that active role, and they're called the general partner, and general partners will have unlimited liability, as we talked about before. So you want to make sure what kind of partnership you're in. There's also something called an LLP. Typically, that's a limited liability partnership. We usually see those with professional organizations. So if you're accounting people, lawyers, and you're deciding you want to go off on your own, leave your employer, set up your own business, you want to be aware of the possibility of what kind of business structure you have. You could be a sole proprietor. You might be an LLP, professional organization, if you're going in with more than one person. It's specifically designed to limit malpractice claims against uninvolved partners. Each partner is liable for debts and obligations created as a result of his or her own negligence, malpractice or misconduct, as well as negligence. So it kind of those attributes follow the partner, so I wouldn't be responsible for someone else's malpractice or negligence. So it limits the liability of the partners, specifically designed again for malpractice claims against uninvolved partners. So there are more liability protections and tax strategies available through other kinds of entities. So for people that are talking about sole proprietors, partnerships, you still have exposure to more liability, except in those cases where you might be a limited partner. So if you want even more protection, you might consider a corporate entity. And corporate entities could be a C corporation or an S corporation. So I'm first going to briefly talk about a C corporation simply because there's elements of a C corporation that also apply to S corporation. I would say that we probably see more people who are going into business for themselves may start with sole proprietorships, and then sometimes as they grow, they might move into an S corp type of situation. But I want to talk about corporations and then S corporations. So in forming a corporation, you exchange money and or property for stock in a company, that's an ownership interest. A C corporation is recognized as a separate tax-paying entity. A corporation conducts business, realizes net income or loss, pays taxes, and distributes profits to shareholders. The profit of a corporation is taxed to the corporation when earned, and then it's taxed to the shareholders when distributed as dividends. And that's what people talk about, double taxation. So the corporation is paying tax on their earnings, then they distribute the earnings to the shareholders as a dividend, and then the shareholders pay tax on the dividends. That's one of the reasons they changed the tax laws on qualified dividends, because it was trying to mitigate the effect or consequence of double taxation. So they came through years ago with this qualified dividends qualify for a lower tax rate, and that's called the capital gains tax rate. So I'll talk a little bit more about some of the protection, the liability protection around corporations when we come back, talk about S-Corps and LLCs, and then some of the resources available. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit WDIY.org.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 87 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Tonight, heavy rain expected, lows around 68. Thursday, chance of showers, highs around 80. And Friday, slight chance of thunderstorms with highs around 85 degrees. The time now is 6:46. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome back to the show. Folks, if you have questions, still plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So we talked about sole proprietors, partnerships, corporations, C corporations in particular. You as the owner or shareholder in a C corporation, so you buy some stock, you do have liability protection. The creditors can't reach through the corporation to have you pay the bills of the corporation unless you've personally guaranteed them. It is more costly to form because you do need, you know, the corporate registration, the legal documents, which are the articles of incorporation. You may need more insurance than you might otherwise have had to have. So there is a little bit more complication around setting up a corporation simply because you need to make sure that you're doing everything legally necessary and proper. So you definitely want to see an attorney, write up all those documents, do everything the right way. And then hopefully, too, they'll give you some guidance on your requirements as a corporation. You have to file a tax return, and you have to 1120, and you have to make sure you're having, you know, board meetings and keeping minutes and that kind of thing. An S corporation is a corporation that is elected to pass corporate income and losses, deductions, credits through to their shareholders. So remember, the C corporation, they report everything and then they just pass out earnings as dividends. They don't even have to pass out all the earnings. The S corporation has elected to pass that corporate income, losses, deductions, credits through to the shareholders. In a C corp, the shareholders don't get to claim any losses if there's a loss. The S-Corp, by virtue of making this election, can pass losses to their shareholders. The shareholders of S-Corporations receive a K-1 reflecting the income loss items to report on their personal tax return and are assessed tax at their individual income tax rates. So this allows S corporations to avoid that double taxation we talked about on the corporate income. To qualify for S corporation status, the corporation must meet special requirements. So you want to make sure that you're talking with an attorney about that as well, and that you comply with all the necessary requirements. Okay, to become an S corporation, that election I mentioned must be submitted. The corporation must submit a Form 2553 election by a small business corporation. And again, an attorney can help navigate that with you or your accountant. The advantage here is the liability protection of a C corporation with the flow through taxation of a partnership. So that's kind of a very simple way to put that. The advantage is the liability protection of a C corporation with the flow-through taxation of a partnership. Owner employees receive a W-2 for their wages. So in the S corporation, remember on the partnership, I said there's no W-2. The partners can't get a W-2. The S corporation, the owner who's an employee, will receive a W-2 for their wages. But in addition to that, if there's additional profits beyond the wages, beyond the W-2, those additional profits can pass through as ordinary income on page one that's not subject to self-employment. So one of the cautions I want to put out here is a lot of people for a while were saying, why be a sole proprietor and have all my income subject to self-employment tax when I can be an S corporation and have a small W-2 with small wages and only have a little bit of self-employment tax, you know, Social Security. Security tax, and I'll take the rest as ordinary income on page one and not have to pay that self-employment tax. Well, a lot of people who started trying to do that kind of thing got caught by the IRS, and the IRS started looking at S corporations a little bit more carefully and questioning what is a reasonable wage, so that if you a reasonable wage for someone, let's say, doing I don't know what it might be, all consulting. You're just doing consulting and your income is $100,000. And in the industry, for whatever this consulting is, that's typical. And instead, in the S corporation, you take a W-2 with $20,000 and you pass through the rest of the income, $80,000 is ordinary income, not subject to the self-employment tax, the IRS would say, no. It's normal, ordinary, traditional, whatever. In the industry, $100,000 is a typical salary. That money is all salary, folks. So then you might get audited, have to pay some extra taxes, maybe some penalties. So there again, you want to make sure if the business structure you're aiming toward, you know, how you're going to use it. You don't want to, you know, try to exploit things just because they're available. You want to make sure that you're being reasonable and doing everything kind of the right way. So that's S corporations. LLC, this is a little misunderstood, I think. It really is, could be any of the entities that I just talked about. A limited liability company is just simply a business structure allowed by state statute. Each state may use different regulations. You want to make sure you check with your attorney what works for you. Owners of an LLC are called members. Most states don't restrict ownership, so members can be individuals, partnerships, corporations, other LLC. There's no maximum number of members. Most states permit something called the single member LLC, those having only one owner. And that's typically someone who might have a Schedule C. They want to be a sole proprietor. They're happy with the Schedule C, but they want a little bit extra liability protection. So they go and they set up an LLC thinking they're going to get that liability protection. They're still reporting their income on Schedule C. What happens for Pennsylvania, remember this is by state statute. So what happens on Pennsylvania, though, we still have that income flowing through on your Schedule C for Pennsylvania, but you also are going to be required to file something called an RCT 101, which, because you're an LLC, it's a bit of a corporate status. So you do have a separate filing for that as well. And there may or may not be fees related to that, but there would be registration fees. And it also depends on what kind of business you're in that more may apply than you might otherwise think. So you want to do your homework on that as well. What did I want to say? Oh, but so what happens, I'm not an attorney, but what I want to mention is some people are thinking they're going to get some liability protection from the LLC, but I don't believe this has been tested in the courts. So if someone gets sued, we're not sure. I don't have anything. I might have to get an attorney to come on and talk about whether this has been tested or not yet. But I'm not sure people will necessarily get that liability protection they're hoping for. I don't think it's been tested enough. But the IRS will treat an LLC as either a corporation, partnership, or as part of the LLC owner's own tax return. So you have to kind of check the box as to which entity you're choosing to be under that LLC. Are you a single member, a sole proprietor, or are you a partnership, that type of thing. And then you make that election when you, I think there's a default federal tax classification for that. So you just want to make sure you're doing the right thing. I'm getting a little short on time here, so I want to make sure that I mention some of the resources that are available. So the IRS does have resources. You can just go to the irs.gov website, irs.gov, and you can type in the search box, starting your own business, and there will be lots of information there about starting your own business. They have great charts on what kind of tax returns you have to file and what might be required. So for income tax, self-employment tax, so if you're a sole proprietor, it's your Schedule C on 1040. You'll have to do the self-employment schedule, which is Schedule SE. You might have to do estimated tax payments. You might have employees, so you would have to file employer quarterly tax returns, 941. You might have to do the W-2s if you have employees. Even if you're a sole proprietor, you can have employees. You will have to get a separate employer identification number. So lots of resources on the IRS's website for the various business structures telling you what tax forms you have to file, the 1065 for the partnership, the 1120 for the C-Corp, and the 1120S for the S-Corp. Other resources available. Remember, I started off the show talking about if you're going to go into business, you want to make sure you're doing a business plan, a market study, understanding your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. There are resources in particular for those of us who are in the Lehigh Valley. Lehigh University has a small business development center, and they have resources on their website that will help talk about some of the issues that you need to look into. They, you know, you click through it. It's Lehigh University Small Business Development Center. They have programs and services. They talk about business and technology development, financing assistance, counseling, management assistance, and pre-venture, which I loved. So for the pre-venture, for those exploring the idea of a business or who are in the planning stages, the place to start is the Small Business Development Center First Step Program. So lots of resources there. There may be other resources available for folks as well. Sometimes your resources might be your accountant or your attorney, and they can talk to you about the business structure. Maybe you did kind of your market study and wrote up your business plan, and you're at that stage now trying to consider what the best business structure for you would be. So sometimes your trusted advisors might be able to help you through with that as well. Lehigh University also had a link for financing assistance program, where they talk about information on bank and government lending programs. Maybe you're someone who wants to start a business, have a great business idea, but you need a little infusion of cash. What are your options there? For example, the gentleman on the call earlier, Bill, had mentioned that he was selling his business and took a loan from his home to buy a business. He was buying it. I thought that he was selling it, sold the company. He sold the business, bought a business, and sold the business. Okay, so there are a number of different opportunities out there for folks. So you just kind of want to be aware and make sure that you're taking steps to do it the best way, you know, before it's too late. I really get sad for people who try to go into business, have a great idea, and it doesn't work simply because maybe they didn't think it all through ahead of time. So be proactive, as we say on the show. Now, we're coming up at the end. I've got to see, what am I talking about next week? Next week, I am talking about, because I think next week is, are we getting toward July 4th already? I think next week might be, let's see, if today's the 25th, the 26th, 27th, okay, July 2nd. So next week, the show is called Independence Day, Getting Out of Debt and Building a Cash Management Program. So I will come up with something for the folks to help them get out of debt, maybe build a cash management program. It's basically called Don't Spend. So Independence Day, the great feeling you get when you're independent of all your debt. It's a good feeling, something that you need to kind of balance with also saving and having emergency reserves, but making sure that you kind of watch your spending to give yourself some freedom as you go through. So that will be next week. I want to thank the listeners. Thank you for calling in, many of you. I really appreciate it. I love when calls come in. It's my favorite part of the show. Thank you, Judy Ann, for being here and taking those calls. Thank you, Jeff, for being here at the board. I appreciate that. Stay tuned for Intertradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.